BBC Sounds.
Davy Scott here, popping into your Classic Scottish Albums feed with another bonus uncut episode from BBC Radio Scotland. Our latest episode told the story of Mother Nature's Kitchen by the Kevin McDermott Orchestra. And I sat down with Kevin in our Glasgow studio for a good old chinwag. I suppose the obvious kind of thing, because you had other lives musically
before this, right? Checkered past.
But I suppose the Suffocation Blues record that came out.
And the Suede Crocodiles before that. My little jangly punky period, spiky malarkey.
So all of that not markedly different. Still you and your songs and all that. Yeah. But what was the journey from, I suppose, specifically Suffocation Blues up to Mother Nature's Kitchen?
Well, basically, I got in tow, rabble of that, taken under the wing, shall we say, of some elder statesmen at the time, maybe, who were really, really old. They were probably 40 or something, you know, which was Rab Noakes, who introduced me to the lyrical content of people who had previously maybe written off because they didn't fit my genre, like Bob Dylan, who some people have heard of, and Neil Young, that some people have heard of, and many other folk. So I did take some sage advice from them. It's like, and put more kind of attention to detail on that. She goes, actually, I'm digging. Now I get it. And so I kind of did a bit of when you get into the role of an actor, you kind of like, what's that called again? Method acting. So we did a wee bit of that, acoustic guitar, and we kind of like listening to pretending to be Bob Dylan for a while and just trying to get into the head of a lyricist rather than somebody who was just totally driven by choruses, and however you get there, that's it. However you get to the chorus, that'll do. Which I did have that attitude for a bit, but then I kind of I was overtaken by the whole. It's important. It's just important. The line that you said there that meant something to you is someone in someone in Cambridge, Massachusetts, is hearing that line, but in a completely different circumstance, and it's like I now get it. Well, it's taken me a while. Well, sitting here now, but then Suffocation Blues, I started to understand, and I could enter. I'm quite good at wordplay. Even back then, I quite liked being a bit of a smart arse. Also, I could entertain myself. I said, oh, look at that. That's quite good, though, isn't it? It's quite clever. And also, I'm very reliant on, and I think I do a bit of mentoring here and there, notebooks. Always have notebooks. Notebook everywhere and handwritten, because I think there's a dimension that you have with a pen on a paper that you don't get just with if you're tapping something into your phone. Not that there was one there, but it's just like, even if you underline something three times or you put an asterisk beside something and you can't remember why, I'll have a look at it and I'll try and figure out, why did I do that then?
I love that, right? And I think that's something. So when we get into some of the songs, we may come back to that. Right. I think we're maybe talking about the sort of method and how you did it. I think really interesting to me, and I think to people listening to this will be thinking, this idea that you could method act your way into a song.
Aye.
And that again, we'll come back to that. But I suppose I'm also thinking about what your life was and what was your Glasgow, for example? Well, what was your experience of that world?
Basically, it was football, skateboarding, punk rock. I left school at 16, went right into Yarrow Shipbuilders, which was a bit of an eye-opener because I could now... I had the tools and the ability to maim and kill, should I really want to do that. But I didn't do that, obviously. I'm just a crazy Mary Hill person. Well, not crazy, but I'm let loose with these very dangerous pieces of kit. And there were guys who, it was like, in the world of adults, they were the same as me. They were up to the same nonsense. And it's just like, and also in the canteen, it was the same time as you could bring in your own LPs, which I was just kind of availing myself of, like anybody that would brought in anything. It'd be like the Jam and the Buzzcocks, and oh man, it was just like I thought that every 16-year-old was having the same experience as me. No, they weren't. I'm going to the Apollo. I'm going to see the Rosillos on the 28th of December 1979, and that's where everything went boom. Right, but then would that be 79? Or was it 23rd of December? 23rd. Farewell concerts. No, they did. I think they did two farewell concerts, but with 14 encores on both. I think that was so. That was like, I'm doing that. That's what I'm doing. So, and everybody kind of cut about in the shipyards talking about the gigs that we're going to and stuff like that. So, there was a community happening there. Again, still naively, I'm thinking when you're 16 and you start in the adult world, everybody's having this experience, which I was happy to delude myself because I was having a time in my life just right then.
But in that, Pete, I suppose the other thing is that your experience as a music lover and going to shows and you know, being knocked out by the energy of all of that, but also by the time we get to the late 80s, we're well into a period where there's something of a renaissance in Scottish music.
Yep, yep.
Certainly in terms of the way that, that musicians and bands of the time were being accepted and platformed and, yep, and in some cases doing really, really well. So you're coming off the back of an independent release in Suffocation Blues, and you're beginning to write the songs that are going to be so put us on your shoulder.
Okay. Well, at that point, I'm just collecting. I'm saturated with I'm taking in the environment that I'm in. I was playing with lots of different people, but then again, I went in the studio with I took my redundancy money. That's what I did from Yarrow's. I made a demo of two songs, which are Wheels of Wonder and Angel. And I sent them off to Folk, which is kind of, I had no agent, no manager, no structure at all, which the irrefutable law of the universe is you day something, something happens. You day nothing, nothing happens. That's an absolute given. So I just sent all the... And Dave Hill from Island Records, newly head of A&R, got back to me. Come down to London, young man. So I did. I didn't know he was ex-Pretenders, and I'd always wanted to work with Robbie McIntosh. So it's like, this is really weird. So I walked in with these two songs, and it became obvious that... I'm in the right place here. And the world went a bit crazy at that point in time, because when Island got involved, then there was Warner Brothers, then there was this, then there was that, then there was that, and it was a bit whiffy, actually, because, well, Island have put their best foot forward in me, and that's kind of what happened then. I'll try and be a bit more creative in terms of where I got to that. Yeah, it was really just, I had to do it. I have to be in the studio. The studio's like my little... well, even more so now with the technology, it's Willy Wonka's chocolate factory to me. I can go to Mars and back in this room, if you like, if I want to, if I've got the right people around me, if I'm working with the musicians. I've been very, very, very lucky in the musicians that I've had around. Call it a bit back to that law of the universe. Do something, something happens. I wanted to work with these people. I wanted these people to be nice people. Turns out they were, you know, and it was just like, this is just fun. And I don't know if I'm getting a bit off topic here.
No, it's good, Kevin. Because in a way, what I'm trying to understand in a way to get into, because actually, Mother Nature's Kitchen, the exuberance of that record is what you're painting for me now.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, again, we were just like, I mean, Robbie just left the Pretenders, and he's just like, "You'll do that," and that's quite a good impression of Robbie, actually. Yeah, this army of guitars arrived with Robbie McIntosh. We did a kind of a rehearsal down in, was it Sarm or something, in London for a bit, and somebody was playing next door, and I had no idea who it was. "Yeah, that's Jimmy Page. That's it." And it was like some Led Zeppelin song or other. I'm like absolutely oblivious, because I wasn't really that sure, you know, what tune it was. And Robbie's like listening at the door, and I think we just about deafened Robbie. But he came up to our situation, which was in Park Lane Studio, and I think we were kind of like a cheap option for Island at the time. They just booked the studio and away you go. That's it. I mean, there was no producer there. I mean, Kenny McDonald engineered it brilliantly, but Kenny doesn't say an awful lot. And it's not to detriment of the music at all. We worked really hard, but it sounds as if you have too much fun, you must be diminishing the quality of the product. We never did that. We were really into what it was that we were doing. And bear in mind, Jim and Steph, they're only kids too. You know, it's like, and I'm like.
So let's, for those who are maybe listening to this Uncut podcast and who maybe don't know all of the characters in the thing. So because I'd like to talk about the band, then we'll maybe go on to some of the individual songs.
Sure.
But that sound, that band. So tell us who the characters were then.
Right, well, there was Jim, my brother, on drums, who's a bit of a prodigy. He was playing like semi-professionally since he was about 13, but very, very well, not just like have a. And his first, I just gave him a set of drumsticks with the grandmother clock. And the first thing that we could play together was Rock Lobster by the B-52s. So it was a... It's like, play that, hit the clock. So there's a big clock in the wall, and it's like, this wore a hole through the thing. And then he graduated to Tupperware and telephone directories and the arm of the couch, and that was Jim's drum kit. Then he got a drum kit, and he started playing in the school band with Steph Greer, who's a bass player. And so that they were kind of like mucking about, and I don't know what they were up to. Like, he's just my wee brother then. It's just like, well, I'm doing my thing and he's doing his own thing, and then I kind of clocked he's actually pretty good, really. Right, so at that point there was the Kevin McDermott Orchestra, so it was me, Jim and Steph. We went through that stage for a bit, and I'm playing all the guitar, my limited Farmer's Corner version of what it is that I can play down in the first three frets. So we were borrowing guitars, players left, right and centre, just to kind of like record and stuff, because I'm technically not that great. Someone has to have their hands in the steering wheel. That's me. I can do that. I can do that in a very kind of a democratically, what would you call it, a benevolent dictator way. Yeah. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to do it. Otherwise, nothing happens. And then when Robbie appeared on the scene, it's just like, Robbie's like, he's like my big brother. It's just like, I hope he doesn't mind me saying that. It's just like, just the funniest, driest guy, fantastic guitar player, but with the sense of humour, just like, he just decks me just with his dad jokes and stuff, and just.
And it is an amazing sound, and that's one of the things that I was most kind of interested in for this record. Is we'll talk about the studio sound in a minute, but the sound of the band. I remember on, I think it was it your Fair and Whole compilation? I can't remember. Where you were using some, I think, outtakes or alternate tracks or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember you in the liner notes, always with, God, that's a great thing to say. You talked about the majesty of the KMO. Do you remember writing that?
I don't, but
okay.
I'll take it.
It's there or thereabouts is what you said. But I always remember, okay, so that's somebody that knows what the sound of a band is, or what the sound of a band means.
I do that. I can do. I will own up to that. I'll put my hands up to. I do know. It's like, also there's a thing that KMO used to do. We used to call it, there's not enough bees in this. We need to let the bees in. It's like, if it's something's too safe. It's like, imagine the movie The Swarm, right? Where you think you're locked up in the house. You've and the bees are coming in, and you've taped up the windows, and you've taped that up, and the bees are not going to get in. But the jeopardy is when the camera closes in the chimney. You forgot about the chimney. And it's a sense of jeopardy. So we always had to introduce the bees. If it was too straightforward, and we'd just look at each other and say, there's not enough bees in this. It meant like there has to be a sense of jeopardy. There has to be a wee bit of edge in here. And how do we do it? We used that phrase. There's not enough bees in this. And it's all about the, like, you think you're safe. You think you've taped up the windows and all that. No, it's the skylight you forgot about. And that's where the sense of jeopardy comes involved. And we were always aware of that. It's just, we need to do something that makes us just a wee bit more. There's
an energy in there, isn't there?
Yeah.
And there's an edge to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's also a size to it. I think people who remember Mother Nature's Kitchen when it first came out would remember that kind of sense of being sort of almost hit by a train, you know?
Well, if you listen to Jim and Steph playing, they're playing mighty, and then Robbie comes in with a blooming. Well, I'd never heard anything like this baritone guitar thing. It's just like, I don't know what you're doing, Robbie, but just going to keep doing it. But even like little tiny things that Robbie would introduce, like the end of us healing at the harbour, he's having a laugh, he's making little seagull noises with a slide, and he's looking at me smiling and thinking, Are you going to keep this? I'm too right, we're keeping it. And it was like, just because it's mischief. It's mischief and it's fun, but it's bang on message, or message for whatever that means. It's bang on, it's right on what we do. This is what we do. It was very disappointing when he joined the Beatles, though. That was very disappointing. I was really upset about that.
And he was good in that band, though.
Yeah, he was good in that band.
So what I was going to, you know, now that we've spoken about the sound of the band,
right?
And I think that Park Lane, somebody needs to write a book about Park Lane, okay? Yeah. But for those people who were never in Park Lane Studios and now it's gone, describe the experience of walking down that lane, and describe the studio, and describe the sound of the room.
Well, it's just you would never think there's it's beside a pub called the Bay Horse, which I don't know what's still there or not. But
on the south side,
On the south side of Glasgow. I beg your pardon. Opposite Queen's Park, or is it King's Park? It's a very innocuous looking little lane, and up there is a lot of sort of mews buildings. I believe owned by there's a management company as well, Jerry and Rab. It'd be a little conveyor belt of, there was always a noise in there. I wouldn't want to be one of their neighbours. There's always seemed to be somebody rehearsing the same song, which is, bless them, take them hat off. It's always this, you're playing this thing, I don't know who you are in there, but you're playing this thing to death. And it's like, just not me at all. I hate rehearsing, always have done. So the whole band, it's like, even going to Steve Shane's Bentley too, we're out playing the Puggy. He's just like, oof. We're playing Wembley Stadium tomorrow. We're doing 3-6. I'll do 3-6 at Steve's. I will do that. And it's the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire thing. It's like, yeah, the answer's Tulip. My uncle's a florist. You know, it's like, but anyway, that's another story. Yeah, Park Lane, it'd just look like a little muse cottagey thing, kind of. But you would go in, and they'd just newly opened I don't know. Stone wooden floor, stone bit for the drummer to go on, and like an old cottage building with a, what do you call them things? The beams
yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, right across, and you could hang stuff from there. You could hang. You could climb
microphones,
up in it.
Whatever. And the reason I'm asking is because I think if anybody's ever doing a history of recorded music and folks in the Park Lane, all you need to do is to listen to Mother Nature's Kitchen, and that is the sound of that studio.
That is fantastic, thing to say. Thank you.
And the sound, I mean, I have worked there myself a number of times, the sound of that room is 100% the sound captured, isn't it?
Thank you so much. I never really thought about it like that. As you have seen, I deliberately didn't listen to the record, just in terms of, I didn't want to give you any kind of pat answers to.
So the following on from that,
right?
How much of it was live? What was your process in the studio?
Jim and Steph played together, but we just take Jim and you'll hear it on the song. It's just my production technique is like, as per the Halt, Jimbo, and that's pretty much it. Like my production technique was, why don't we just do it like we did it in the pub? And that was my direction, which is Kenny, thankfully, Kenny McDonald kept it in. We were kind of swithering. Because you know that way when you laugh on recording or something, by the time you've heard it 100 times, it's no funny anymore. You know, it's just like, I wish I hadn't done that. You know, it's like, but however, that seems to have stuck. So the production process was pretty much, do it the way we did it. You know, it's like, why are we messing with this? You know, because we had a little rehearsal room that we had, just was down by the river, no longer there. But and I was just like, if something didn't sound right, I'd knock the blooming blazers out of my guitar till it sounded right. Or I'd go to the toilet, or you know, the acoustics and the 12-string. If I could feel it, I can do it. You know, and then I go back and Jim and Steph would join in, and wasn't it that hard? You know,
and that's great, and I think that, I suppose that's what we're saying about this record, really, or what I'm saying about it is that it comes off the page like that.
Aye, well, it was mind how we did it like that. Aye, well, let's do that. You know, and there's no this is before, you know, cut and paste and whatnot, and it was like, you just did it. And if it sounded right, why are we messing with this? And it's just like, and the energy was there, the personality was there, they were all there, even the, just, again, back to the personnel, I'm very, very lucky, and like, Jim's a signature drummer, he's not just a good drummer, he's got a signature, right? And
absolutely,
that's great. And then you get Robbie in, signatures, and it's just like, he's got signatures all over it. Steph, Glenn, he'll do a little bass run, which is pure McCartney. It just lives. It's just like, where did that come from? Because it's a signature. It's just like when you put it all together, it's just, you can't really mess with that, because these are people's, the way they do it. I'm not gonna ask them to dumb down anything.
So it's the organic thing about the people in the room.
Yeah,
and the
absolutely. And the personality, I tell you, had a lot to do with it. Just the fact that me and Robbie and what, we're just shooting the breeze and we're absolutely gutting ourselves at anything. It's just, I don't know what it was. It was just like the daftest thing. It's just going around the bay horse and the guy behind the, it was a rather large barman. Robbie would just turn around and say, like, Captain Condensation. And it was obviously falling about. It's just like, what's, I mean, no disrespect, but it's just like silly things. It's just like the monkeys or something. It was just like.
And I think, Kevin, people listen to this, I think, will understand, particularly people who have been in a band,
yeah,
will understand that, and how that is, that becomes the thing that you know, shields you from the world and becomes, yes, the world that you go to.
Yeah.
Let's talk a wee bit about the songs themselves, and we'll talk maybe about some specific things.
Sure.
But I wonder, one of the things that I thought, just revisiting the record, is there's a lot of thematic stuff in there,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
is in some ways, was a lot of stuff that was being talked about at the time. You know, work, struggle, pressure, all of those kind of things that, yeah, that I feel in the songs. There's, right, optimism as well, and yeah, empathy and all of that.
Yeah.
How much of that was you channeling your own experiences of life, and how much was it a commentary?
Quite a lot. I mean, it's like, Healing of the Harbour is about literally our rehearsal room, and it's just like, well, just write what that is.
Tease that out though a bit. Yeah, that's,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Well, Healing of the Harbour. It's like, I mean, I'm down there where I practice my songs. It's as cold as a, and there was a little bit of because we'd got a recording contract by then. There's a line in it that I'm talking about. I mentioned it earlier when Ireland offered me a recording contract. The world went bananas. I'd Warner Bros. On the phone. And anybody and their auntie on the phone. And it's what's the line? My own line. It's like what you could have. You let me live rent free while you're dunning by my street. That's all right. I can't even remember the lines of my own songs. But basically, it's just like, the you could have had for free. It's just like it was a bit of cynicism in there. It's just like you're trying to steal what you could have had for free. That's the line, my own line that I wrote. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You're trying to steal what you could have. That was me thinking, reflecting on, why didn't you phone me up when I could really have used your help a year ago? But you learn by your own actions in terms of you don't get nothing for nothing either. But so I worked pretty hard at everything I was doing. But that is the, it's like suddenly, because Ireland stuck their chin out, the world went nuts, and it's just like, and there's a wee bit that line is referring to that, because, and actually I wrote it just prior to getting it to Park Lane actually. I should have really listened to this before I came in, shouldn't I? Then I'd actually know what songs are on the album.
So I've got a couple that I'll maybe prompt you with as well. But I think, again, you mentioned it there. One of the things I really like about this, there is that, there's the kind of empathetic thing about you writing, Kevin, but also there is also that wee kind of, always that wee edge, that wee sort of slightly, yeah, won't you walk the plank with me?
Yeah, you know? Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. Well, that is a kind of love song of sorts. I know who I'm singing about, but I'm going to put it on air. But they were, it's just like I'm trying to woo someone, and I know it's not going to be easy. Even if I manage to be successful in the wooing, it's not going to be easy, because I know it's been I've had many wonderful women in my life, and then a lot has foundered on the rock of me wanting to do what it is that I want to do, which is kind of selfish, but I know that's, if you tread that path, if you walk that plank with me between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea, it's no easy. And so I kind of made that plain from the start in a lot of areas, but I don't think I'm that hard to live with.
But it's, you know, again, people listening to this, Kevin, don't always understand how much of a write, a much of the heart and the soul that the writer puts on the page.
I like to be a little bit mischievous also. I mean, there's no point, well, you and David, you'll know as well, you can't, if you just rhyme moon with spoon all the time, it's a hell of a boring existence. You know, it's like there has to be, There has to be trickery in there to amuse yourself. If you're not amusing yourself, then who else is going to be? You know, a killer chorus is a killer chorus, no matter what. But if you're writing lyrics, you've got to know why it's not just moon with spoon, and you've got to know why there's a little thing that doesn't quite rhyme light. Because you, I don't necessarily, things can rhyme perfectly, but I like a wee bit of that doesn't quite rhyme there. And it, if there were a rhyming dictionary, I would possibly pick out a word that's not rhyming with it. That mean that I know I'm kind of getting into technicalities here, but it's just like, well, if you've watched the Get Back thing, like a lot of folk have, I love you like a pomegranate. And it's like it's, you swoon over it because it's the Beatles, but that's what you do. Mm. That's exactly what you do. I love you like a cauliflower. That's what you do until something clicks. It's like, no, I know what I'm saying now. And sometimes you go off on a wee journey of your own that you didn't foresee. It's just like, right, that sounds like something that happened to me when I was doing this, that and the other. Let's go down that road. Let's write about that now. And you're playing tricks on yourself constantly, which is... It's a good thing. I mean, if I'm not Dylan, I'm not Mozart, but I know how to take that journey. I know how to get from A to B, and I know what satisfies me. And I haven't even been successful in everything that I've done because I know when I'm flannelling. I know it. You know, it's just like right, that'll do for now, and then before you know it, you've recorded it. It's like it's no great, but you like it. That's great. You like it, you get back to me saying that's one of your favourite things. And I'm like, well, I could have possibly spent a wee bit more time on that, but that's okay. If you like it, great.
And that's a thing that writers do. Okay, one thing that you said there that I really wanted to pick up on is you said, I know what I'm trying to say, okay? And one of the things I think that is, and we'll talk about a couple of specific songs here on the record is... Sure. The songs are saying something.
Yeah.
Talk about Mother Nature's Kitchen, right? We all do what we're so have to do, you know. And that kind of sense of acceptance. So talk me through that song. Talk me through the writing of it, what it means to you.
First of all, it is a love song, which I very, very rarely use the word love. In fact, I don't think it appears anywhere on any of the KMO songs, only recently. I don't know why that is. It's not a hang-up, it's just somehow or other it seems all too readily to hand. Right, so it is a love song. I'm trying not to name names here. It's like it's there was a set of circumstances whereby a trip to America was involved, which is where the red, white, and blue comes from, Statue of Liberty. Won't you walk the plank with me? I'm trying to make this. I'm trying to woo this person or let them know that what I'm thinking about them. And we all do what we have to do is me reconciling to the fact that this isn't going to happen. It's like I'm reconciled to it, but I've got to give it a go. And I understand why the situation we're in is happening, but I'm reconciled to it. So we all do what we have to do. If it's the colours on your flag that pulls you through, it's all right, it's sore, but I get it.
Is that the same person I'm talking about you that is saying whatever comes to pass?
It's easy to become complacent and acceptant of something that maybe you don't... there's a wee bit of a... this'll do, I'll get by for now. It's like, but that doesn't... You're not colouring the edges of your life then. You're not doing anything for anybody, let alone you. You know, even we times like that, I'm more mindful than I ever have been in terms of, you see the wee lady at the queue in Tesco that's footing her change and all that and talking to the cashier. Maybe that's the only person she speaks to the entire day, right? So what I'll do is I'll just try and... Oh, I don't know how we got to that from here, but it's just like what comes... Just day something. Do something. Day something. It's just if it's
you're saying it beautifully, and it's the, you know, that I get that, and it's the sense of be in the moment, you know, allow yourself to kind of live and engage with the kind of world around you. And I suppose it comes back to that sense of the kind of the energy and the sort of engagement of the song
record. Yeah, I'm trying to, it's a note to self as much as anything else in case I forget, because it's easy. As human beings, we can wallow. We forget The simplest thing, that was a day something. Sometimes you forget that. It's staring you in the face. Sometimes you can forget, oh, I'll just see what's on Netflix. Nah, go out there and, for me, it's kicking a ball around. I'll get my bum and sannies on. I'll go up to, you know, up to the Fir Hill and kick a ball around for a bit. And I might meet someone there, or somebody that I haven't seen in 20 years or something. And before you know it, you flick the first domino. Or just odd things. Even back to Suffocation Blues. Originally, it was Andy Partridge who was going to produce that for me. But Andy... So Andy's got in touch through social media, until I don't think he's on it anymore, and he said something really nice about me on it. Like, I was blown away by that he even remembered me, because I was like, he was so kind. But I was still working in the shipyard at the time for Suffocation Blues. Sorry, I said I'm going off on that.
No.
Yeah, but Andy designs board games, and I was working in a naval shipyard, and he was trying to design a 3D battleships. So we spent an afternoon talking about women, battleships and warships and not music at all, which is an education. But again, back to Dane something. I did something. I wanted Andy, huge XTC fan. I wanted Andy Partridge. I can't remember how I got in touch with him. But he got off the train. We ate toasties in Paddington Station and talked about battleships, because he twigged quite early on that I didn't really have any money, which is not, that wasn't his motivating factor. But it was like, if you're going to pay someone to produce something of Andy Partridge's status, then there's a financial component involved, shall we say. So, but then moving on from that, just again back to that, like my experiences that I've garnered from being around people that I admire, and I've had and I have had good experience with these people. It educates me as to how I should be around other people, or I try to be. Sometimes I can be cantankerous and whatnot. If it's just if it's not going well or something, it's just, I say to Kenny, I kind of get me stop doing that. I'm going to watch the television. So if going to just give us a shout when you stop doing that thing that I don't like.
you were talking there about Suffocation Blues. I think the album.
Yeah.
Right.
Which of course the song's on Mother Nature's Kitchen, yeah. But it isn't on the album.
Yeah, yeah. I love that song on this album. Yeah. Talk us through. It's one of the two. I think two things there that are a little bit more. Than this is just you and guitar.
Yeah.
So talk us through the song and how you recorded it.
Well, it's really my little vignette, my little, if it were a Beatles track, it would be For No One or something. Like, I don't know. It's just like me seeing myself in someone else's situation, which, again, back to the method acting thing. So what if I'm Eleanor Rigby? I can't write Eleanor Rigby, and obviously it's been done already. But I took a wee journey, I walk in someone else's shoes. Sometimes I can write quite well in other people's shoes, but I don't write narratively, really. I don't write like, not that I'm comparing myself to these people, I don't write like Springsteen or whatever. I've never driven a truck, and I won't write about having driven a truck. I will write more kind of metaphorically. That usually does it for me. Little word trickery, enjoy it. But that song Suffocation Blues isn't that. It's I'm definitely being the guy in the dole, wondering why am I bothering, and I'm feeling, and then there's the Eleanor Rigby one, it's the older lady, and it's just but it's, yeah, they're doing the best they can. These people are not feeling sorry for themselves. But they're doing the best they can, and I'm not going to patronise. I'll just describe them to you. I won't patronise them, but that's how I'm perceiving their life. I don't know who they are, but it might resonate with somebody out there. But
beautifully said, and I think it comes across it in that song. You talked about Wheels of Wonder being one of the first two things that you demoed for this project, and it's the thing that kicks the record off.
Yeah,
talk us through that song.
Well, I like sort of letting a wee bit of daylight in and magic sometimes. The intro, for instance, is like it's not too dissimilar to Last Train to Clarksville, just a little bit. Huge Monkees fan, so no, I dream I was in prison with my hands in my head, which actually was a dream. Because I always have notebooks. Wherever I go, I have a notebook, and I'll just scribble stuff down. and I will asterisk it, or I'll write, I'll scribble underneath it. So I'll, yeah. And the Wheels of Wonder is like my little hope chariot, or whatever that is. It's just like back to that day and something again. I can't help but get, I'm always brought back to it. Wheels of Wonder is like my little headspace where I can go and I can travel in that little bubble and be observant. And I'm, for that point, when I can get there in my head sometimes, if I'm not very good at meditation or whatever, I'm far too itchy for that, but I can describe it to you as how I'd like to get there. Yeah, there's only one place I belong, and Wheels of Wonder is my little, is my floating downstream on a beautiful summer's day, and it's my little my headspace is there's only one place. It was a dream that was in my hands, my head. It's like there's the. And there was I suppose there's a little bit of green grass of home in there as well. It was like, if I was in prison, and where would I really like to be? The green grass of home. I just made that up there just now, but it's maybe appropriate a parallel that I just thought up right there.
That idea that you know, I think you get that from the song as well. That there's a kind of exuberance and a sort of a. A joy in that song. That I can sort of see that kind of that cosmic space.
Yeah,
that you wanted to sort of inhabit.
I would never profess to be any kind of guru or oracle, but I do love the notion of it. I do like the notion of it that there's something that I don't really get by in this human form. I don't understand it.
And you sort of get that just go to right to the other opposite end of the album with the closer, Healing at the Harbour.
Yeah.
It's in that as well.
It's there too. It's all, it's like optimism. I burn with optimism's flame, to Nick Andy Partridge's line. I'm burning with optimism's flame, or I try to be, and if I'm not, I will try to recognise it and say it to myself. It's just like, you're a jammy git. Give yourself a shake. Give yourself a shake. And I'm all, it's just like it's the older I've got, it's like it's less things are black and white. Nothing's really that black and that white. And it's the grey bits that'll get you. And it's just like, you know, so you try and give yourself a shake and do the best you can when you can. Healing at the Harbour was all about. That's you let me live rent free while you're burning down my street. I'm trying to, like, that line was, I quickly liked the line, but that again was back to just the world going nuts, phoning me left, right, and centre. I couldn't get peace. Just landlines at the time, so it was like, so at the same time, landlines. Robbie was crashing at my house, my flat in Napier's Hall Street in Maryhill. Well, the phone kept going for him. Turns out it was like the Who were trying to hire him, and McCartney was trying to hire him as well on my landline. I'm like really annoyed. Which said, get me, Lord. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like, so you can't join the Who? How's that? Yeah, because I've already said yeah to McCartney. I'm like really upset. I'm like, you what? But I think you'd see it as well. It's like, you could probably see it in my face. We're sitting just my wee single end in Napier's Hall Street, and we're having just a time of our lives, because we went from the studio and have a couple of beers and then just crash out, and then we'd go up the next day and do it all over again.
Okay, and that energy is in there. Look, we're calling it a classic Scottish album, and it is.
Right.
What is it you think, as an artist looking back, because there's now, that's 1989, so there's a lot of years. You got to live with your work.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, God, aye. Yeah,
and so when you look at it now, what is your feeling about Mother Nature's Kitchen as a body of work?
It reminds me of a body of work. I am not narcissistic. I am not. I think the boy's done good for what the situation presented us was, which was just, there's the studio time, go and do it. And I think we represented ourselves well, we represented the energy we had well, and if I don't mind saying so, some of them, my writing was pretty good, kind of edgy, I knew what I was doing. I even like the sleeve now, which I hated at the time. It's like, because it didn't have the band on it. Bless them. It's like, just things like that. I look back and I think, yeah, it just reminds me of, it's just, for me, it's just joy. It's just joyous. And then obviously Marco came after that when Robbie went to join the Beatles for the Bedazzled record. So it's apples and pears. So I had all that to come, but I didn't know that then. And I didn't want to leave the studio. No, I don't think any of us did. Obviously Robbie was off doing other things. But I was just having... It was just too much joy was happening. I'm never happier than when I've written something and I'm in the studio and it's going well. Never happier. It validates, I don't know, maybe a bit highfalutin. It validates my place on the planet.
Put that in a T-shirt. That's beautiful. Right, Kevin, listen, thanks for coming in. Thanks for your artistry.
You're very,
for your
very
music.
Kind. And, very,
and,
very
and,
kind.
And yeah, and lang me your Lumreek.
Thank you so much. A delight and a pleasure and lovely people and wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks again to Kevin McDermott for sharing his memories of making Mother Nature's Kitchen. Don't forget to check out the All Singing, All Dancing episode, complete with the top tracks from the album. It's on the Classic Scottish Albums feed, now on BBC Sounds. Next time, I'm going to be chatting with Corinne Polwart about her award-winning album, Fault Lines. It's a cracking interview. So I'll just take it from there.
Yeah.
It's a cracking interview she gave, so you do not want to miss that one. I'm Davey Scott. Thanks for listening.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.